That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy. We are live on FUBAR Radio for another week where we do one thing and one thing only, and that is make you better with money. I say this absolutely every single week. But it is disgraceful and shocking the lack of financial education we have. We go through an entire education system, school, university, grad schemes. It's all about teaching you how to earn money, how to earn a salary, how to get a job. But once you get that job, you get that salary, no one ever teaches you what to do with it. And that is such a vital skill. I do not care if you care about money or you don't care about money. You need to know what to do with it. And so we are providing you with exactly that. We are the one place in the entire world, might be exaggerating there, but we are the one place that spends an entire dedicated hour teaching you everything you need to know about money. And the question you might have is, well, how are you going to do that? And how are you going to keep me entertained for the next hour of my life? Well, we're going to do a few different things. Number one, we're going to tell you what's going on in the economy, but not the boring news, not the bog standard stuff, not the irrelevant crap. We're going to go for the stuff that actually affects the money in your pocket. And boy, oh boy, have there been some stuff going on over the past week that has affected money in people's pockets. We'll get to that. If you know what I'm talking about, then you know already. But if you don't, then you will. Give me like 5-10 minutes. I promise you, I will keep you up to date with everything going on. And then I'm going to answer some of your questions. Right, that's right. This is a back and forth, guys. You can always DM us on Instagram, at That Money Show on Instagram. Hit us with your questions, the questions you've been too embarrassed to ask, the questions you didn't even know you had, the things that have always been on your mind about the topic of money. And I will do my best to answer as many of them as I can each and every week. And we've got a few good ones this week in particular. And then on top of that, we bring in other people because you're going to get bored of my voice after a while. So we're going to bring in some interesting guests, famous faces, experts on the topic of money to share their own knowledge, experiences, and personal finance advice. And we've got this week two very interesting, exciting guests. Number one, we've got the managing director of Debt Free Advice, Matt Dronfield. And we also have the money mindset expert herself, Laura Ann Moore from Mind, Money, Soul. Two absolutely brilliant guests that are both going to make you better with the money in your pocket by the end of the show. I can promise you that. So should we kick off with the news? I think that's a brilliant place to start because the news and the world of money have been like, if you're just listening and you're not watching, I'm like doing like an interlink with my fingers. They have never been more correlated than this week. So what has happened? There's this guy. He has a slightly orange face. His name is President Donald Trump. I don't know if you've heard of him or not, but bloody hell, he's been up to some stuff. So he imposed tariffs. Well, he threatened to impose tariffs. Tariffs being like a tax on importing goods into the United States of America. He then went ahead and actually implemented the tariffs he told people he was going to implement. People were still surprised by that, by the reaction, even though he's been talking about it for a while. But turns out he talks about a lot of stuff he doesn't actually do. And then he does some of that stuff. And he's like, I told you I was going to do it. But anyway, he's like that guy that, like, you know, when you say like 100 things and one of them comes true and he's like, I told you that was going to happen. That's kind of the vibe that I'm getting from him. Anyway, tariffs came in, not just on a few countries, on every country around the entire world. A minimum 10% tariff was put on even places like the Falkland Islands. I think there's a country that has inhabitants purely made up of penguins. I was talking about this last week. Yeah, he put tariffs on that country as well. I don't know how the penguins are going to deal with it. I'm sure they will be absolutely fine. And then he put on increased tariffs on places like the EU and China. I mean, I'll get into China in a second because what's going on between the US and China right now is crazy. And how do people react to this? Well, the stock market, which is kind of an indicator of consumer confidence and, you know, market stability. Yeah, that thing dropped 10% in 2 days. Like the stock markets in the US in particular, 10% in 2 days. We're talking trillions in value wiped off the market in 2 days. People's pensions were affected because they're invested in the stock market. People's investments, stocks and shares, ISAs, everything dropped and dropped hard. You then had little recoveries because he came out and said, I'm going to put a pause on tariffs for 90 days, except for you, China. He wasn't going to put a pause on them. We'll get to that again in a second. And markets were like, oh, we like that. Up 10%. Well, 9.52 to be exact in a single day. And then it's just been a roller coaster ever since. Up, down, up, down, up, down. But like normally up, down means like, you know, 0.2% here, 0.1% there. We're talking crazy swing. I mean, that swing on, well, what was it now? Last Tuesday, Wednesday now, was it? Was an increase of 9.52%. That's the eighth biggest single day rise in the S&P 500's history. So we're talking big stuff happening in the world of money. People's investments going all over the place. And if you are someone that invests or is interested about investing and sees this and you are freaking out, don't worry. I give you a money tip every week and it's going to be purely about how I personally am dealing with all of these swings in people's investments. Anyway, I told you I was going to talk about China. Well, China, he hasn't paused those. Or maybe he will pause them, or maybe he won't pause them. But they're in a bit of a tariff war where they just keep upping tariffs against each other. And it's just going nuts. So let's just keep an eye and let's see what happens. And I'm sure I'll be talking to you about it next week. Just keep an eye on the news because it does affect the money in your pocket. And governments all around the world are figuring out how they are going to, well, adapt to what's going on. Cool. Let's discuss some other stories because I feel like... Like I said, I'm going to speak about tariffs every single week. So let's not give them too much airtime right now. Let's give you some more interesting things. There was a cool survey actually done about how many people are going to try and achieve bucket list dream activities this year. Turns out 60% of you, well, 60% of 65% of Gen Z's, 18 to 28, plan to spend more on experiences in 2025. We're talking about things like travel, food, heritage, arts, theatre, live music, family events. You guys want to spend money on experiences. To be honest, me too. I've always been an advocate for putting your money towards experiences over things. Things come and go. Experiences, well, you say they kind of come and go, but like they are locked in your mind forever. That is where value for money comes from. So let's take a look. And I would love to know, do DM us on Instagram at That Money Show. Let me know what things you are going to be ticking off your bucket list this year. But apparently, 61% of people want to tick off a bucket list experience. 83% of Gen Z and 75% millennials, so those of you 29 to 44, are very keen on ticking off those items. And 18% of you are going to be ticking off two dream experiences in 2025. I'm jealous of you. 18% of two experiences. I'm trying to think of like the one experience that I'm going to be ticking off this year. I want to bungee jump, but I don't think my mum will let me. I don't know. She says she's an optometrist, so she's worried about my eyes. Not even about me just like the rope snapping and me falling and like, you know, something much worse than going on. She says I can go blind. I was like, well, that's the least of your worries. Anyway, that's my bucket list item this year. Don't tell my mum. And if you're listening, I apologize. I'm probably going to try it at some point. But I would love to know what your bucket list experience and if you're going to do it and how you're going to do it. And if you're going to do it frugally, because that is what I like to hear about. But how are you guys going to go about your bucket list items? Well, apparently 36% of people are cutting back on luxury treats and dining out. And 35% of you are reducing coffee and takeaway habits to allocate more money towards experience and memories and investments. I added the investments part. That's a lie. But I would love it if everyone just cut back on their spending and put more money towards experiences and savings. Because I think that is the way you live a happy, financially savvy life, because experiences are the things in life. In other news, any of you got a student loan? I know I do. Not to both scare you and myself, I know I kind of call myself a personal finance expert. I have a £45,000 student loan that I still need to pay off. I know, 45,000. I actually just vomited a little bit in my mouth. And there are some changes happening to the student loan. So thresholds for plan 1, 2, and 4 loans are increasing by 4.3% this month. That's the threshold when you start paying your student loan. So let me give you some numbers because this is important stuff. If you're on plan 1, last year you would start paying it from 24,990. That's now going up to 26,065. Plan 2, that's the one I'm on, 27,295. You would have to start paying back your student loan if you earn over that. It's now 28,470. Plan 4, 31,395, going up to 32,745. And plan 5, 25,000. Oh, plan 5 staying the same. Still 25,000. I did say plan 1, 2, and 4. Having said that, where's plan 3 on this list? And if you are on plan 3, what is plan 3? Because I've got plan 1, 2, 4, and 5 are having changes to them. Plan three, maybe not so much. The interest rates still remain the same kind of system. 4.3% on current is the current interest rate on all of the plans, except for plan two, where it varies between 4.3% and 7.3% interest on that one. Again, I'm on plan two, so great. I'm on the one that is going, well, with the highest interest rate, potentially. It depends on how much you earn. If you are intrigued on that and you have any questions, do ask. Otherwise, a quick Google search will answer absolutely everything for you. And just to remind you how it all works, once you're earning over those increased thresholds that I've just told you about, if you're on plan one, two, four, or five, well, sorry, if you're on plan two, any of those, you pay 9% of income above the threshold, and 6% if you're on a postgraduate loan. So you pay 9% of your salary of anything you earn above those thresholds. For example, let's say you earn 32 grand and you're on plan one, you'll pay 9% on £5,935 of it, because that's how much is above the threshold. So just to remind you, if you come out of uni and you're not earning, you don't officially pay back student loan until you go over that threshold. The other fun side of it is after a certain amount of time, you never pay it back anymore. So if you haven't paid it back in full, that loan gets wiped. The unfortunate news is for those of you that are just starting uni now and you're on plan five, it's after 40 years that will get wiped. If you're on plan one, 25 years after you start repaying it is when you no longer have to pay it back. And if you're on plan two or plan four, 30 years. But the big news in particular around that is just you only start paying it from a higher amount, going up by 4.3%. So that's around £2,000 higher than the threshold used to be. Around, please always check the maths yourself. And lastly, apparently FOMO and high demand is creating perfect conditions for ticket scams. Please, please guys, this is just a general call to action. Please be more careful when it comes to buying tickets to concerts. I know, Oasis are coming up and you are desperate to be there. Or in my case, Robbie Williams. Don't ask why. Just a big Robbie Williams fan. Something you didn't know about me? I've actually never seen him live. But I wouldn't get scammed to buy his ticket. So just the kind of important part here is that 25% of people have fallen victim to ticket scams. We're talking an average of £82. Doesn't sound a lot. It is quite a lot of money. And 51% of you would risk buying tickets from questionable sources to avoid missing out. Guys, cut out the FOMO. Stop being scammed. £82 is a significant amount of money. And remember, buy only from official sellers or accredited resellers. You have to be cautious. If it seems too good to be true, it probably is. Remember to always, always research sellers, read reviews. If you can, use a credit card, which kind of gives you Section 75, and I'm actually going to come back to that a little bit later on. But using a credit card can increase the protection you get on purchases, especially if you're not so sure about the security of them. And then if something has gone wrong and you're worried, please freeze cards, contact bank immediately. The quicker you get in contact with your bank, with your provider, the quicker they can sort these kind of things out. All right, guys, stick around because after this, I'm going to be joined by the Managing Director of Debt Free Advice, Matt Dronfield, to speak about debt management.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show. We are live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy. And I did promise you just before the break, I'm going to be joined by the Managing Director of Debt Free Advice, Mr. Matt Dronfield. And as promised, he's sat right opposite me as we speak. Matt, welcome to That Money Show. How are you doing today?
Great, thanks. Thanks for having us. What a beautiful day as well.
Absolute pleasure to talk about the fun topic of debt, right?
Less beautiful.
Yeah, let's we'll draw it back just for a second. But it's a vital, vital topic to talk about. I literally said before the break that I myself, personal finance expert, or claim to be to some extent, but I've studied the topic a lot. I still find myself in £45,000 worth of debt. I know it's a slightly different type, a student loan compared to a typical debt, and there are, you know, factual ways of how you repay sure. that. But what I'm trying to say is it's a very normal thing. Most people do have some levels of debt. It could be your mortgage, it could be a credit card, it could be a car finance scheme. These are all different forms of debt, and they can go from minor to major. So let's go straight in to, through the work you do, what are the most common types of debt that exist, and what are the most common ones that people fall into that are the most dangerous?
Sure. So Debt-Free Advice is a coalition of charities that have been working together for 19 years this year. And in that time, we've supported over 300,000 people with their personal debts. So one of the common misconceptions is just how rare it is. And people often think that they're the only ones in this situation. We did a survey last year. You're actually more common to tell your pet than your partner or loved one about your financial situation, which when you think about it, it's probably not unpeculiar at all.
No.
But it is a fact that we just don't speak about our personal finances, especially when we're in debt. And information from the Money and Pension Service, which is an arm's length government body that funds us, reveals in London there's 4.5 million people that are worried about the debts that they're in.
Wow.
So that's 5 out of 10. So if you're not worried about your own personal finances, you absolutely know somebody that is. If they're telling you or not about it, it might be a different story, but there are so many people that are in this situation. And in terms of like the most common types of debt we help with, most of it is about housing. So the top one for the last 6 years has always been either rent or mortgage arrears, if you fall in it, and then followed by your council tax. Now, the third most common type of debt for the last 5 years was always credit cards or store cards. Mm-hmm. But in the last 12 months, we've actually seen that switch to utility debt with the increasing cost of living and your water, your gas, your electricity rising dramatically.
So a lot of it is coming onto those kind of compulsory payments that people have to pay, and they're just struggling to meet bills and just standard living costs anymore. I feel like potentially, and I could be wrong here, but the kind of credit cards being a part of that list was when people even had the luxury to even think about spending on credit cards. Now so much of people's focus is going on like, how do I even make up the utility bills, the mortgage payments, like you mentioned, rent and arrears and all that kind of stuff. And it does show you the statistics that you were sharing before, that it's just so common. If it's not you, it's the person next to you that is most likely going to be worried about debt. That doesn't mean that the other 5 out of 10 aren't in debt themselves.
Absolutely.
They just aren't worried about it or admitting they're worried about
it.
Because debt is just such a common thing. And like you mentioned, it is one of the most taboo areas of personal finance. People don't like talking about personal finance, full stop, even the good stuff. But when it comes to debt, that I suppose that feeling of shame or worry or concern, you don't want to put it on other people, or you don't want to admit to other people you've been put in that position. So people have this outlet, which is you guys, right? And the coalition of charities that you work with. So when someone does reach out to you, or if someone is considering reaching out to you, what is the first thing that you will kind of give back to them to kind of, I suppose, either ease the worry or try and kind of fix the problem?
So the first thing you do is reassure the person that's come to see us, right? As I said, it's so common. And literally our debt advisors that we have, and we employ over 90 across London, this is what they do day in, day out. And we tell people, if you was feeling unwell, you had a bit of a tummy upset, you go and see a doctor and discuss
Absolutely.
It, right? If you're fortunate enough to own a car and it doesn't work, you take it to a mechanic and they'd work it out. The same exists in our situation. If you're worried about your finances, we've got expert qualified advisors to guide you through that process. They're brilliant at what they do and explain it in terms that even I can understand. So seek that expert advice and let them do that. When you go there, what you can expect is them to ask you about the totality of the debts that you have. So it's really common for people to come to us and just tell us about the one debt that they're most concerned about. And that might be because they're about to lose their housing, or they're worried if bailiffs might turn up at the door and take some of the possessions. But it's important to explain to the advisor all of the debts that you may have so they can make a more accurate picture of your personal finances. And that way, the advice they're going to give you is going to be far more tailored to your set of circumstances and make you make that informed choice. Once they know about the totality of debts, they're going to speak you through your kind of monthly income and expenditure. And that way, they've got that full picture, know what solutions might be most appropriate.
Yeah, and I loved your analogy of when something's wrong, you go to the appropriate person to fix it. But with the topic of money, everyone's either, you know, they're thinking, oh, it's not that bad, maybe. I should be able to figure it out. And sometimes things just get worse and worse and worse. And the only time you'll pick up the phone to actually ask someone for advice is when you're in the worst position possible. Like, it's not just like the car, like you've burst a tire anymore. It's like the entire car, the engine is gone.
Exactly.
Like the engine is destroyed and you're at the point where you need a new car, full stop. So Ali, if you are listening to this and you are someone thinking, yeah, oh, I've got a little bit of debt, like, what's the issue? I mean, what's the issue then? Just picking up the phone, speak to a stranger. There's going to be zero judgment there in the first place.
Absolutely,
because
yeah.
They don't know you. You don't know them. But what they actually have are practical knowledge and practical steps that you can implement that you didn't even know or were aware existed in the first place that can actually start taking you out of that problem. You don't have to figure it out on your own. And you probably don't even know how to figure it out on your own. Whereas these experts are experts for a reason. This is what they do day in, day out.
Every single day. And for people that don't want to come forward because they fear of being identified, we've actually also got a WhatsApp number that you can WhatsApp message us on. So to keep that anonymity there as well and be really discreet.
Amazing. And I don't think we need to go through the exact steps because everyone is going to have different circumstances,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
How they're going to get out of debt. If it's credit cards, it might be switching to 0% balances. Or if it's with mortgage and counsellors, I'm sure there are specific programs for vulnerable people to be able to kind of sort out their specific problems. You'll have a personal solution for each individual person. But if we kind of look to prevent the problem from the source, what should people be doing either once they've got themselves out of debt or to prevent themselves from going into debt in the first place?
Yeah, so I think there's a few things, so practical steps, and we've touched on the first one, which is speak up early. The earlier you seek advice, the more tools are going to be available to start working through what those issues may be. The second one is around understanding the debts that you've got. Not all debts are equal. The priority and non-priority debts, which is really important. So priority debts are ones that you could potentially lose your housing for or even end up in prison if you don't pay them. There's some random ones out there like your TV license, but that's for another day. But understand what those priority debts are and those non-priority debts, which is where you have more room to negotiate with the creditors on those terms. And the cost of those two debts is different as well in terms over the long term and how long it takes you to repay them. Next step is around making a realistic budget. And what's realistic really looks different for every individual as well. Someone's income and expenditures vary dependent on where they live, who lives with them, a whole manner of things.
So many
a
things,
budget
right?
is very impersonal. And then there's a thing around, we talk about kind of stop the bleeding. So ask for some breathing space. And that's a technical term as well as one that we all understand around putting a legal pause on creditors while somebody is receiving advice. So if you're not aware of what breathing space is, speak to an advisor about it because creditors have to pause the interest and they're not allowed to chase you whilst you're in that period. And then access extra help. Lots of people may be entitled to benefits that they're not claiming or discounts on their utilities or council tax. And again, an advisor would be there to hold your hand through that entire process and even in some circumstances, apply on your behalf.
Amazing. And all of this is free?
Absolutely. So as a service, we are funded by the Money and Pension Service, and we have been for 19 years. So it's completely free, completely impartial, and completely confidential.
I think that's the vital thing because often someone might be listening and think, what's in it for you guys? Like, there's got to be something here because there are a lot of debt service providers that cost. And it's important for other people or anyone out there to be aware that you should probably be seeking the charities and the free services first. Well, not even first, only really, because once you guys exist, there shouldn't be anyone else they really need to go to in the first place. Is there ever a case where they would go and end up paying someone for debt advice and debt service?
So if you Google, just random, I need debt advice, some of the solutions out there will be companies that will try and charge people to put them in a solution. In the same way, if you Google visa applications, there'll be companies that try and charge you for visa when you go on holiday. A really good tip is search for the Money Helper website. That's a government website, and that details all of the charities that is funded to provide this advice independently across the country.
I like that. I want to talk about one type of debt that's been, I think, becoming more and more popular, if that's the right word. Buy now, pay later.
Oh my goodness, for sure.
It is taken off. I think, what was the latest service I thought that kind of signed up to like one of these buy now, pay later services? I'm not going to name and shame all of the different providers and all that kind of stuff, but it was like Deliveroo. You can now do it on Deliveroo where
I
you can pay
too.
For your takeaway in 3 payments over several months. And it's just kind of becoming this idea that, oh, you know, you can actually afford whatever you want and you can do it as much as you want because you just push it down the line. I was speaking to someone literally the beginning of this week who used to believe that buy now, pay later literally meant they were getting free money. Right. And they didn't realize that what it was doing in the background and the harm that it was causing them. Are you seeing more and more people come to you having kind of just gone down this route, not been aware of how it works in the first place, and now completely struggling because they're at the other side of it and they didn't realize they have a huge amount of debt to pay back? And is there more that these companies and services need to be doing? Because it doesn't sound like we're going to be getting rid of them anytime soon, but how can we have them in a more safe way?
There's definitely more things those companies can be doing, and there's more regulation coming in from the FCA around those providers. I think the first thing to comment on is the fact that sometimes buy now, pay later can be a really good tool. Mm-hmm. If you're planning to use it, for example, Christmas, if you're planning to spread those payments over 3 months to make that period more manageable, and you're budgeting to do that, and you know what the expenditure is going to be over the next few months, it can be a really cheap way of getting past what is a pressure point in your kind of annual financial calendar. The tricky bit becomes is when you're using it for unplanned purchases, or what the marketing department in these companies are trying to do is to try to get you to buy a more expensive product or an impulse purchase in a shop. And we see the marketing particularly targeted at younger people.
Yeah.
Think of the sports shops that are really pushing it. And Deliveroo is a great example of trying to... So if you're in that situation, you should see these buy now, pay later as kind of a red flag. If you can't afford your takeaway... Don't. You need it that week, right?
Time to cut, guys. Time to cut.
Exactly. It's not a failure, but it is a red flag, and time perhaps maybe to see that as a sign to seek that impartial advice.
Absolutely. Anyway, Matt, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for coming down. And people can check out the Debt-Free Advice or Money Helper online. Absolutely. Find all the charities available to them. And guys, do reach out for help. It is one of the best decisions you'll probably ever make. Thank you very much, Matt.
Thank you.
Cheers. Well, there you go. That is everything you need to know about the world of debt, and well, I don't think we missed out anything at all. So thank you very much to Matt for coming down, and it's now one of my favorite segments of the show, which is money tip of the week. Something short, something practical, something for me to give you where you can actually get money better with your money right away during the show, because that's what we like to do. We like to give you things you can actually start to implement right away. And I want to go back. I want to go all the way back to the topic of investing. Remember how I spoke about the tariffs about 15, 20 minutes ago with you? Well, a lot of you are going to be feeling a lot of pain right now. You'll be looking at your pensions. You'll be looking at your investments. And if you haven't, you might now, because I'm kind of talking about it. And you'll think, oh my God, what have I done? Was investing in X, Y, and Z, or, you know, starting to put money towards my pension, the biggest mistake I've ever made, because my money is taking a turn for the worst? And this is what I want to tell you. It's a bit of like a keep calm and carry on. Investing is a long-term strategy. It's not somewhere you put your immediate money. It's not somewhere you put your money for tomorrow or even for next year or even for 3 to 5 years away. It is money, I like to say, for at least 10 years from now. I personally started investing 5 years ago, and I got hit straight away by the COVID crash. But what I said to myself was, that money is going away for at least 10 years. I'm 5 years into that. Why would my strategy change? The whole point is, things can go up, things can go down. But in the long run, the stock market has always tended to go upwards. And by that, I mean, if you take the worst ever 30-year return of the S&P 500, it has been a positive 7.8% annual increase, positive return. 7.8% positive is the worst ever 30-year return. It took 3 years for the markets to recover in 2008, 3 months in COVID, but overall, the S&P 500 has an 100% recovery rate. So things are going to go crazy for a while, but all I'm trying to say to you, it's not any advice. Remember, your capital's at risk. Money can go up, money can go down, but that's the whole point. You should be aware of those risks when you start investing. If you had intentions of doing it for the long term, you need to think about that. You need to stick to that strategy. And that is just kind of my keep calm and carry on call to action, guys. I know a lot of you will freak out, but these things happen. Many of you might be experiencing it for the first time. It's happened before. It will happen again. I can't promise you what will happen in the future. But if you had a strategy, this would be the time to stick to it. Anyway, guys, stick around, because after this short break, Laura and Moore from My Money Soul will be joining me on the show.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show. We are live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy, and I am going to be joined on the show right now by one of the coolest people in the world of personal finance. So cool. She's done like a rock star sign in front of me just now. Laura Ann Moore from Mind Money Soul here to talk about all things, well, mind, money, and soul. Not necessarily in that order. Laura, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. What a lovely intro.
I've been prepping
Sit
it all
that
week
up
for
and
you.
Put that on my podcast.
We're going to cut the recording and we'll give it to you straight away. Or actually, I'll take a new other versions of it, because I think I can do better. But talk to me, mind, money, soul. What does that mean?
What doesn't it mean? No, joking. So I take a very holistic approach to finances, which I think is a little bit different than what a lot of people do. The money part literally stands for the practical part, right? Like the spreadsheets, the numbers, all the things that we need to know when we think we relate to money. But the mind part is understanding your mindset around money, because money is emotional and everything that we do to do with money, all the decisions we make come from a place of emotion. Mm-hmm. So really understanding your mindset. And then the soul part is, instead of chasing money and money being the end goal, what does your soul want? What does your soul need? And how do you use money as a tool to get you there, as opposed to money being the kind of end goal?
Yeah, I'm on board with all of that. Mm-hmm. I think like 5 years ago, I said that money was like 50% maths, 50% emotion. 2 years ago, I said it was like 80% emotion, 20% maths. I think today I might go 99-1, because I don't think people realize just how much emotion is just such a core factor in every decision you make with the world of money. Even me, someone that thinks I can separate feelings and emotions from money. Like, I'll give an example. The stock market right now, that's a roller coaster. And I know sensibly, the math side of my brain knows, I know my plan, I know everything I'm trying to do, but oh my God, I'm feeling so uneasy inside. It is a horrible thing to kind of experience, seeing your money go up and down, volatile, all this kind of stuff. And that's where I kind of realized, like, it's so emotional. And like, I've been very close to making decisions I didn't want to make. And I feel like so many people are going through that exact experience right now. And I would love for you to kind of give them a little bit of like a, you know, mindset 60-second call, especially around that particular topic of what's going on with investing in the stock market, so that people can understand that and how they can kind of lean into the emotional side and utilize it rather than kind of block it off.
Yeah, I think that no one is like excluded from that. Like, you know, I know all of this stuff and I've still been like, this, the drop, that, you know, it's just being a human. So I guess what I would say, especially in this context of the stock market and what its volatility, is this is why when you start investing, it's really important to have an understanding of your relationship with money, but also your goals, your desires, your strategy, because when things get rocky, you have an anchor, you can tap back into that. And if you find yourself going down paths where it feels like it's coming from a place of emotion and overwhelm, fear, FOMO, all of the things, you need just a minute to like stop and check. So you've kind of got like the short term and the long term side. Long term is like understanding your money mindset, doing the money mindset work, understanding your relationship, your emotions, and doing that. And that's ongoing. You can do that at any point, and it's an ongoing journey. But the short term is like, how is it impacting me right now? I don't need to figure out my entire relationship and solve it all in one day, but I do need to be aware of where I'm coming from, a place of like mindlessness or overthinking or the emotional side of like all the examples that I just gave. So I think that if you went into investing with a certain strategy, tap back into that strategy. It's so easy to get caught up with the noise of the news and people on social media.
Oh my God.
Make sure that it's coming from a calm place. And if not, ignore the messages that are like, millionaires are made in this dip, because it's like, yeah, great. But you could also make a move from a place of emotion that absolutely messes everything up. Mm-hmm. So really just being in touch with yourself, your body, your emotions, what's going on, is really important.
Yeah, the emotions are so high right now, and sticking to that strategy, like, I can't even stress how important that is, because like last week towards the end of like whenever the tariffs came in, I don't even know when it is now, it just feels like a blurred period of my life, stock markets dropped like crazy and everyone's like, everything's going right, it's crashing, and then we had a day where things turned around and the stock market had its eighth best day in history. And everyone was like, ha, I told you so. Like, this turn around now and everything's going to be fine. And then it started going the other way again.
Yeah.
And I'm like, guys, like, everyone's going to try and message or put out messaging saying they knew what was going to happen and this is the tactic according to this specific thing. No one actually knows. No one knows.
No one knows.
If you have that strategy and you know the long-term plan that you had, that's the one that you probably should be sticking to, rather than following that one guy who stuck a story on and who happened to be accurate about one in particular thing and can't shut up about it now. I promise you they'll be wrong at some point in the future. All right, let's move away from investing just for a second. I'm sure we'll come back to it because it's such a hot topic at the moment. But I want to know about you, because you have a very interesting relationship with the world of money and how you came into becoming a mind, money, soul expert and a personal finance expert, full stop. So will you take us back to the beginning of your journey with money and let us know just your relationship and how you fell into it?
Yeah, basically, I just grew up in a family that didn't have a lot of money. So I kind of saw the stressful side of that firsthand. Didn't realize, obviously, this is all having a massive impact on me and my mindset, you know, because you don't know at that age. But yeah, I just knew it wasn't a good situation. And I built up quite a lot of scarcity and lack and fear around money. So when I started making money, you know, when you get your first job, I was like a total money hoarder. Like, it made me such a saver. And because my dream was to become an actress and I wanted to go to drama school and I needed £15,000. When I started my first ever full-time job, I was delusional and I set myself out this task to save £15,000. And I did by the time I was 22. It came from a mix of like being a bit of a money hoarder, but also having this really, really, really strong emotional attachment to what that goal was. So when I was like saving and things were being presented to me that I could spend my money on now, the goal of wanting to go to drama school was so strong that that's how I saved that £15,000. I fell into doing what I'm doing now because I, right before I was due to go to drama school, I ended up spending that £15,000 going traveling instead. The irony. The best thing I could have done.
Bye-bye,
the
drama
most
school.
Amazing experience. Huh?
Bye-bye to drama school.
Bye-bye. Never went. And when I was in Australia, I was like, I don't think I want to be an actress anymore. So cue the identity crisis. But that's when I set up my blog and my Instagram and I started talking about money like 2025? And just by talking about it online, and I think I obviously had quite a different style of talking about it because I always had a sort of mindset element mixed in. Because I just find it interesting. Like, I've read self-help books and psychology books from like the age of like 17, 18. So yeah, it's just, yeah, I fell into it by my own personal experience of came from not a lot of money, managed to be really good with my money just because I learned stuff. I taught myself stuff. I read books. I learned from the people around me. And then, yeah, was like, this is cool. And I want other people to experience this.
And you've gone on quite a few saving journeys since then. Since you spent that 15 grand, I assume that was bye-bye 15 grand, back to zero bye-bye. Again. But then you went on another good run, right?
Mm-hmm. And I saved 25 grand just before I moved to London, which was like 7 years ago, maybe 6-7 years ago. Mm. The 25 grand was, I was in a job where I got my old job back and I was basically an account director for a marketing agency. Sales, it's pitching, it's full on. And I was like, I know I don't want to do this forever. And I was like, my friends were moving to London. I decided I wanted to move to London and go backpacking it off, like, after a bit of time. So I was like, I need money. But the amazing thing was, because I'd already saved that £15,000, there wasn't a doubt in my mind that I couldn't do it again. Hmm. It's like I'd built up this case of like, yeah, of course. So when I just got back into saving again, it's not that it happened easily, but I feel like I already had the foundational habits to do it. And I could focus more on how do I bring more money in to save. So I had side hustles. I had such a random range of jobs outside of my main job. And just everything went into the saving part. So yeah, and then I hit 25 grand. I think I'd either just moved to London or it was after being in London for a little bit. I can't remember, but yeah.
So you've gone through it all. You've gone through every side of personal finance that there is. You've gone through the side of not having to having to not having to having to now, I suppose, being in a much healthier position where you really make, like you mentioned, mindful decisions around your money. That doesn't necessarily always mean like being that extreme saver that you have been at periods of your life. You've also been a spender at times. You go through all the different range of emotions. You've, like I said, you saved that 15 grand and you spent it. So you can do it. You can do it all. And I'm so interested to hear about these different, I suppose, money personalities that both you've experienced through yourself and you've experienced through the community that you've built. Things that people can be aware of to think, oh, wow, that does sound a bit like me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, like you say, I've gone through such a range of different like labels of I'm a saver, I'm a spender, I'm a this, I'm a that. And I think that we go through different seasons in life. And I'm a big, I think that that's important to acknowledge that your priorities change at different points. And I think like when I spent that 15 grand, because I was such a saver, when I got when I was spending it in Australia, for the first like month or two, it was the weirdest thing drawing down on that money because I hated spending money. And then I was like, I had to have a real word with myself. I was like, you're the other side of the world with £15,000 in a bank account. You're not going to drama school anymore. Are you going to waste this opportunity? Like, money comes back. So obviously my mindset completely went the other way. And it's kind of like you say, ping-ponged. In a good way, like I've learned so many lessons from saving, so many lessons from spending, and everyone in my community relates to me in some way. Like whether they're like, oh my God, I get really guilty when I spend, but I've got all this savings, or, oh, I'm totally a spender. But the way that we label ourselves and talk about ourselves has a massive impact on how we behave. So if you are in the, I'm a spender, I'm always going to be a spender, even though you're trying to save, you're going to spend your money.
Mm.
So the way that you talk to yourself in whatever area you're in is really important.
Yeah, I was going to say that you're fortunate to have experienced both, which means that you know how to kind of switch between them as and when needed. But a lot of people think that they're kind of in one and they're in that for life. So they're a spender, so they're always going to be a spender, or they're a saver, so they're always going to be a saver. So when you're talking to those people, how do you get them to transition out of this personality and label they've given themselves?
So I think it's first off like being aware of how you talk to and about yourself. Like sometimes we are on autopilot so much with the way that we talk about ourselves because we've been with ourselves for so many years that you don't even realize you're saying it and doing it. Like this isn't about money, but like one thing I used to have is I had a really bad habit, and I think a lot of people do, especially if you're a business owner. How are you? Oh, I'm busy. Like, do you know what I mean? You're labeling, you're like, I'm busy is not a noun. It's not something to describe myself, but I would find myself getting really overwhelmed and stressed. And at some point I had to go, I'm always busy. So I can either choose to be busy and enjoy the busy, or I need to change my lifestyle. And it's the same as like saving and spending. There's something that feels comfortable about the way that you've labeled yourself. There's something that feels comforting and safe. But a lot of the time, if we think more about being like a spender, the other side of that, whilst like your brain is like, yay, we're safe spending, we know that the consequence, if you're living paycheck to paycheck and spending all the time, can actually be really damaging for your mental health because you're having sleepless nights, you're stressed about money, you're worried, you're anxious. Things like this happening in the market and the economy freak you out even more. So it's like being aware of how you talk about yourself and to be able to change that. It's not just going, okay, I'm just going to start calling myself a saver, because your brain will be like, mm-hmm. No, you're not though. So you have to really take small actions.
Yeah.
So in this example, if you're a spender, you want to be a saver, start to shift your language, even to like, I'm trying to save, or I'm learning to save, put £5 away.
Yeah.
You're a saver. Done. You know, like all these little actions and habits build up to your self-identity, like put those little coins in the pots.
All right, Laura, I really hope you're kind of revolutionizing people's brains right now that are listening to this. But I've got one final question, and you're either going to hate me or love me, because you should have an answer prepared for this. And you can take money, you can take mindset, you can take soul, you can mix two together, you can mix all three together. But just give me one thing, one spark that someone should be aware of in the world, particularly of money, that they might not be thinking about right now that they can take away from this conversation.
I guess what I would say is remember that money is neutral. Money is not good or bad. It is the emotion that we as humans choose to attach to it. So however you're thinking about money is the experience that you will have with money. Money is just a form of exchange. So you get to pick how you feel about it.
All right.
It is a choice.
You chose money, mindset and soul for that one. I love it. Laura, thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate you here. All right. Amazing. That was Laura Ann Moore, the Money Mindset Soul, I probably put them in the wrong order, expert. Go check her out on socials. She'll be very easy to find. Her name was quite stand out there. It's now time for audience questions, guys. It's the period of the show where I answer your questions, the questions you've sent in, to DM us on Instagram at That Money Show. I say it every week, at That Money Show. It's the name of the show, guys. You should know how to DM us. Any questions? No question is too embarrassing, too small, too unimportant for me to answer on this show. And this week, well, we've got the question that I've been discussing for most of the show, which is, hi, Gabriel. I've been hearing a lot about new tariffs and global uncertainty, and it's making me nervous about my ISAs. I've got some money in stocks and shares, and I'm not sure if I should be making changes or just ride it out. Could these tariffs affect my investments? Well, they will affect your investments. Your investment will go up and down. It's a more volatile time at the moment. But I'm going to go back to what Laura said and what I've said throughout the show, and it's as simple as this. What was your strategy at the start? Were you planning on being a long-term investor? I hope the answer is yes, because when you are told or you learn about investing, you understand that it's a long-term activity. It's not for money for next year. It's not for money for 3 years from now. I like to say minimum 10 years. Some people say minimum 5 years. So if you said to yourself, I'm going to be putting this away, money away for at least 10 years, and you're 3 years into it, you should be doing exactly that. Keep investing. That's your strategy, little and often, because over longer periods of time, you reduce your risk within the stock market, according to history. So stick to your strategy, stick to your guns. And there's another thing. A lot of people look at this and they say, if you saw a house for half price, you'd be like, holy, I probably shouldn't say that word. I could say that word, but holy crap, I should buy that house. It's half price. But when the stock market drops, you don't look at it and you go, oh my God, it's so cheap now. You go, everything, oh, the world is crashing, everything is bad. Why don't you flip the script a little bit and go, wow, now's a great opportunity for me to, you know, continue doing exactly what I'm doing. It's even cheaper, because when the stock market's going up and everything's green, everyone loves to buy it at that point. You're just buying it at its most expensive price. So maybe just flip the script and flip the narrative on yourself a little bit. Second question coming in that says, hi, my partner and I are saving for a house, but I'm unsure about setting up a joint account. She struggles to save consistently, which causes tension, and I worry about losing control of the money. Are there any benefits to having a joint savings account, or is it better to keep things separate until we are closer to buying? I'm married, but we have a joint bank account. And we use that money for both of our paychecks to kind of go into. And we have several reasons for this, and I'll kind of go through them, but also make sure that you're aware of other things. Because, you know, having money together, we're building one financial household. And so therefore we kind of see it that way. We both still have our own individual, you know, like credit cards and saving accounts to take advantage of both of our ISAs, because there are kind of some perks to having your own individual accounts, individual pensions and all that kind of stuff. But all of our money flows into one place, and then we decide together where, like, what to go out of it. For example, some people that rent will just, you know, all the bills will go in and then you pay your rent out of that account. And it's very fair. You're both kind of like splitting the rent basically 50-50 because it's coming out of both of your accounts. Whereas some people, let's say one of you is earning 10 times more than the other person, you might choose to, you know, one of you puts in X amount and the other one puts in another amount, and you pay 10% of the rent and the other person pays 90% of the rent, because you do it according to how much you earn. And this can all be done through the joint bank account. It's a very nice and easy way to kind of split your expenses. But let me go through some pros and cons, and then you can kind of hopefully have some education to make an informed decision for yourself. So obviously number one is simplicity. Having one account to track household bills, to track spending, rent, utilities, groceries, all that kind of stuff. It's a much easier way than trying to figure out, oh, you spent this and then you spent that much. One account obviously adds a lot of simplicity, easier to access funds because everything's in kind of, again, one pot. So when you're saving together and you want to pay for that thing from that saving pot, rather than trying to figure out, is it coming from your savings or my savings? Nice and simple. You get transparency and trust, which is a big thing in a relationship, and you should be talking about money already, especially if you're looking to buy a property together. Money conversations should have been on the table a long time ago. If they haven't, it's time to have a money date together. And then you kind of get, you know, potential efficiency, convenience, potential for shared savings. And also there's another thing, right of survivorship. If something goes wrong, you know who's getting the money. It's going to your partner. Just some things to be aware of quickly. Joint liability. So you're both account holders are jointly responsible for any debts or overdrafts that happen on the account, even if one person is the cause of that. You can have conflicts if you have different spending habits and financial goals, which is why I said have a money date, people. Figure this out first through conversation rather than just, oh, we'll just see how it goes, and then you don't like what's going on and it builds tension. Like you said, it sounds like you need to have the conversation first, figure out the way you're going to work together, and then you can start implementing the joint account. Some people don't like the loss of financial autonomy, someone else knowing everything that's going on in their financial world, but you can use credit cards, obviously, and individual accounts to spend from, if that gives you any more peace of mind. Your credit history could be impacted because it becomes tied to the other person. And it's a hard transition. It is. You're going from being an individual with your money to, you know, being mixed up with someone else. But ultimately, if you're building a relationship based on trust and you are hoping to have a future with this person, maybe don't jump into the joint account tomorrow, but definitely jump into the conversation as soon as possible. Figure out the way you want to be financially intertwined for life, and a joint account might be the result that you think from that. And if not, that's absolutely fine. Both methods are chill. I'm cool with both. Just because I do one doesn't mean you have to. Anyway, guys, that's all we've got time for. So I want to say a big thank you to everyone that came on the show, Matt and Laura in particular. And remember, you can download the Foo Bar Radio app, and we're on Instagram at That Money Show. You can get us on any podcasting platform. I have been That Money Guy. This has been That Money Show, and you are now officially better with your money.